written by R.D. Blackmore, and adapted in 3 episodes for radio by Barry Letts, we present the most popular and enduring of romances, Lorna Doone, starring David Schofield as John Ribb and Alison Pettit as Lorna Doone. Episode 2.
It would have taken 10 king's messengers to get me away from Plover's Barrows without one word to Lorna, but for my sense of the trust his majesty had reposed in me. I had no idea why he should wish to consult me, though my mother was of the opinion that, having heard of my fame in the West Country, he wished to give me a coat of arms.
The Master Stickles! Surely an officer holding the king's commission must have some notion of his errand. Wish the king sent for me. Why must I go to London?
You'll learn in good time. My task is merely to fetch you there. Can tell you this, boy. Although the matter does concern the king's peace, your summons comes from his majesty's bench of justices. Indeed, from the Lord Chief Justice himself.
Well, yes. Judge Jeffreys.
My son, be not afraid. We're not going to skin thee. Only tell all the truth, and all shall be well.
Jeremy Stickles' words were of little comfort to me. As I left old Smiler at Dunster to be returned to his stable, and we hired our mounts on to Bridgewater, from Bridgewater to Bristol, and so on across the country, I grew more and more apprehensive of my coming audience with the notorious and cruel Judge Jeffreys. And when at last we came to Westminster, it became clear that I was to be left to face the coming ordeal alone.
There now, once you've executed the recognizance for the chief clerk, my task is done.
Recognizance?
This bond, bumpkin, to hold yourself ready and present to give evidence to the Lord Chief Justice when called upon on pain of a heavy fine. Make your mark here.
I can write, sir.
Then write your name, booby.
I'll be gone. There are fair lodgings to be found in the lanes abutting the Strand Road, which leads from Temple Bar to Charing Village. You'll be with you, Master Ridd.
I'm with you, Master Stickles.
Now, sir, when shall I be taken before his honour?
How should I know?
Come back tomorrow.
Tomorrow. Tomorrow.
Not today, boy.
Tomorrow.
Your honours are not sitting today.
Come back on Monday.
Tomorrow. Tomorrow.
Sir, the door is open to the courtroom. Either you let me in to be heard by the justice, or you discharge me from that deed I signed. I have to go home to see to the harvest. My mother won't let
me. Your name is not on today's list, sir. Come back tomorrow.
Does his lordship know how long I have been waiting?
Eh? What's that you say?
Your pardon, sir. Be so good as to come with me.
Why? What did you want of me? Well, who are you, sir? How do you know me?
My name is Ketch John Ridd, and I respect and admire you. I fear that you have been taken in by people of no principle. In my opinion, should you like to hear my opinion, sir?
Well, you should be honored, sir.
Well, now, it is my opinion, young man, that the court is acting ultra vires in this matter, and you would be, without question, well within your rights to court.
Oh, I must better leave you, sir. Sir, for I see that the door is open again. I beg you, please, sir, kind sir, please accept my very best thanks.
Thanks? Young man, gratitude is no entry for my fee book. I have considered your case and given you my opinion as a member of the bar. I would have accepted 1 guinea only, offered with goodwill, but now I shall enter it too.
But, sir, learned sir, I did not know I was to pay. I thought you listened from compassion for my grievous case and, well, out of a sort of liking for me.
A lawyer? Afford to feel compassion? Gratis? You young curmudgeon.
Oh, sir, no curmudgeon. If a young man had called me... Very well. If this is a reasonable expense, then you can come with me to Lord Justice Jeffreys and receive from him the 2 guineas for your counsel to deny his jurisdiction.
If you drag me before that devil boy, he will strike me from the bar at once and starve me and all my family. Let me go, for God's sake. Another moment will be too late.
John Ridd! Are you there? John Ridd!
Go then.
Mr. Hab. Here I am, sir.
Come this way.
Is this the man?
It is, Mr. Spank, John Ridd of Orr in Somerset.
John Ridd, follow me.
Now answer my lord the truth, or we will have it out of you. He loves not to be contradicted. Neither can he bear a hangdog look.
How now, councilman? And who are you?
If it please your worship, I am John Ridd of Orr Parish in the county of Somerset, brought to this London some 2 months back, and every day save Sunday I have attended in the great hall of Westminster expecting to be called upon. Yet no one has called me. And now I desire to know whether I may go home again.
Well done, John. Now go bail, you have never made such a long speech before. Is this true, Spank, what he claims?
It was not until this very day, my lord, that the case has risen to the top of your list. It appertains to a complaint for 5,000...
I remember the matter well.
I'm ready to answer, my lord. If you ask me nothing beyond my knowledge, you'll be on my honour.
You had better answer me. Everything, lump. What have you to do with honour? Now, is there, in your neighbourhood, a certain nest of robbers, miscreants and outlaws whom all men fear?
Yes, my lord.
And what is the name of this pestilent race, and how many are there?
There's the Dooms of Badgery, Bagworthy Forest, may it please your worship. And we reckon there'll be about 40 of them.
Sons of God! But how long have they been there?
30 years? More?
You need me on the Western Circuit, by God. And you shall have me when London traitors are spun and swung. Now, a few more things than I've done with thee. Is there any sound round your way of disaffection to His Majesty, His Most Gracious Majesty?
No, my lord. No sign whatever. Well, we pray for him in church, hoping it may do him good. But after that, we have naught to say, not knowing much about him.
Aye, and the less you say, the better. That is as it should be. I meant to use you as my tool, John Ridd, but I see you're too honest and simple. I will send a sharper down. Keep a still tongue until he comes. And now get thee gone, Jack, and with all speed. I grieve for His Majesty's purse after feeding you 2 months or more.
Nay, my lord, I crave your pardon. Not a groat have I received.
Spank? Is it so? Is His Majesty come to this, that he starts his own informant?
My lord, the thing has been overlooked, my lord, among such grave matters of treason.
I will overlook your head, foul Spank, on a spike from Temple Bar, if ever I hear the like again. You have swindled the money yourself, foul Spank. See to it.
Yes, my lord. At once, my lord.
I spent the rest of the morning working out how much my stay in London had stood me in board and lodging, and early in the afternoon clutching a memorandum of expenditure duly signed and attested by my landlord, I sought Mr. Spank once more.
Ah, yes. Mr. Spank asked me to tell you that he's gone to the sea for the good of his health.
What? And he handed me a piece of blue paper, looking like a butcher's ticket, bearing the words, John Ridd, go to the devil.
And so, as the foul hot weather had brought with it rumours of plague, I made haste to quit the town which had become so hateful to me. And in but 7 days, being much distraught in mind and body, I had made my footsore way back home.
You walked all the way from London. It must be 100 miles.
200, more like. A coat of arms was maybe too much to expect. But what kind of king would jib at the hire of a horse or two for the best, the most loyal, the most virtuous?
The very kind we have, Mother. Didn't make a captain of his guard then, Jack?
He saw His Majesty but once, in his carriage on his way to church with a Sunday hat on, a waving of his hand and smiling.
Aye, and Willie Mike, the scoundrel. Little he cared if my Johnny was starving in the street.
Nay, Mother, I was never hungry, save in the hour before my dinner. And I could have hired my own ride home, had I not already spent my money.
on better things.
Oh, John, it's beautiful. Look, Lizzie, a neckerchief of silk.
Oh.
I shall wear it to Sally Snow's birthday feast. I'll look so elegant.
Oh, dear Johnny, when can I wear a lace cap now? I'm a farmer's daughter and a farmer's widow. And
aye, and a farmer's mother too, and the prettiest I ever did see.
Oh, you're a dear boy, John.
And how do you propose to adorn my beauty, John?
We could use it as kindling, maybe.
Oh, the book! Oh, let me see. The Voyages of Sir Martin Frobisher to the Frozen North. Oh, dear! But it's regular. Dear, going to spend so much on us.
Faithful boy to tell him that I'd actually bought for Lorna. I think the price of which quite frightened me. It was a ring, set with pearls and with a sapphire in the midst of them, as delicate as could be found. Well suited for the slender whiteness of my Lorna's finger. But when I reached the top of the slippery watercourse across the glen, I saw that the white stone had been covered with a cloth, the sign that Lorna was in trouble and wanted me. I crouched in the niche of rock, amazed at my evil fortune, with naught to do but wait and gaze and fear the worst. And when she came at last, she came slowly and sadly, and as I went towards her, there was no sign of gladness in her face.
Master Rick.
Mistress Lorna. I had hoped that you were needing me.
Oh, yes. But that was long ago. 2 months ago or more, sir.
I'd better go.
Oh, Master Red, I did not mean to vex you. Come away from this place. I am watched and spied on. Come to my bower, John.
Do you love me, Lorna Dell?
Oh, yes. I like you very much.
Do you love me more than all the world?
No. To be sure not. Why should I? I like you very much, Master Red, and I think of you almost every day.
Every instant of my life I think of you. For you I give up my home, my duty to my dearest ones. For you I give up my life and hope of all life beyond it. Do you love me so?
Not by any means. What should make it likely? Especially when I have made the signal, and for some 2 months you have never even answered it. If you like me so ferociously, why do you leave me for other people to do just as they like with me?
To do as they like alone and not to marry Carver. Tell me you're not married Carver.
No. My grandfather thought me too young. I'm only just 17, you know. But then they wanted me to swear a solemn oath and be formally betrothed to Carver, who is twice as old as I am.
Did you?
Of course not, Master Red. And when I refused, he and his father, the counselor, were both for using force. But Lorenzo would not hear of it. But now I am watched and spied and followed, and half of what little liberty I have taken from me.
Yet you are here now with me. And thank the good Lord for it.
I should not be here but for the aid, the courage of my dear little Granny Carfax. She watches those who watch me and warns me. And in her rough way, she comforts me. I have no one now but her, since others have forsaken me.
Oh, witness my greatest anguish that I had left you in no word. All the time I was in London,
London? You've been to London?
Oh, aye. I've called to give evidence about, well, in a matter concerning the King's peace. I am bound to secrecy. Lorna, put your hand in mine.
Why?
Oh, the other one. Looks so little lying there in this great bear's paw of mine. Mistress Lorna, I swear to thee that never...
Master Red, And by what shall you swear so fiercely?
By the holy beauty of this day, by God's blue heaven above and the blossoming earth below, I swear...
The flowers will wither when the winter comes.
My love will never wither, and I shall never forsake you, Lorna. And in token of that vow...
Even as I spoke, I slipped onto her finger a little ring of pearls.
You crafty master ring. Oh, but it is so pretty. I've never worn a ring before. I cannot wear this now, John.
Oh, no, please, please don't take it off.
I dare not take it off. I should be cheating you. I will try to love you dearly, just as you deserve and wish. Keep the ring for me until that time comes.
Oh, dearest, darling, love of my life. Oh, how long must I wait? Love, my Lorna.
You must not kiss my hand like that. Master Red, it is high time for you to go home to your mother. Oh.
Maybe it was as well she bade me not to come again for safety until 2 months had passed. One for your sake, one for mine, she whispered. For the hay harvested under the higgledy-piggledy eye of John Fry leaned in drunken stooks awaiting to be stacked. And then the wheat was ready to be gathered in. The farm was looking for its master.
But who'd have thought it? When has he ever come to our harvest supper before?
He had no idea it was tonight.
Oh.
Did you see his face when you said the reapers would all be celebrating? Parson Bowden to say the grace and all.
Maybe we should warn Johnny. Lizzie, you can take your nose out of that book and get you down to Coombe Acres and tell your brother that Uncle Ben is...
Your future wife is sitting in the parlour.
Lizzie!
Yes, honey, our cousins soon enough. They're all coming up the air.
Oh, mercy on us! And the cake is not even mashed!
Lizzie, draw the ale!
Grandfather, why should we not join them in the kitchen?
Your supper will taste as good in here. Sit down, girl, and stop your fidgeting.
Uncle Ben! Welcome back to Flourish Barrels. I hope you're in better taste than the last time you visited us.
Well enough, but none the better for the noise you great clods are making.
You must allow for harvest time, Uncle.
So it seems, and allow a great deal, including waste and drunkenness, no doubt. Now, sir, if you can see so small a thing from up there in the clouds, this is my granddaughter. And my heiress, little Ruth Huckaback.
Come out to the kitchen, dear, and let me chuck you to the ceiling. I always do it to the little girls, and they can see the hams and bacon.
Do you know how old she is, you numbskull? She was 17 in July, sir.
On the 1st of July, but many people will not believe it.
Why?
If my son may not dance Miss Ruth to the ceiling, at any rate he may dance with her. We plan to have a little harvest dance, Uncle, as soon as the table's cleared. Do join us. There's roasted pig to be carved, and deer meat, and...
very good eating. You farm folk may not be wealthy, but you dine as richly as any squire.
We could buy the old farmer's nose pot and more besides, with for sale. We're not beggars.
Trust, boy, nobody can have too much money. I dare say you'd not refuse if the good Lord offered you a fistful more.
Oh, I have much to thank him for already, Uncle.
And I, John, and I. There she goes, my dear granddaughter Ruth. And who'd guess she's such a head for figures? And what a cook! Why, you'd not believe. Hey, where are you going?
Oh, your pardon, sir. I must broach another keg of cider.
Uncle Ben and his granddaughter stayed with us for over a fortnight. Ruth almost became one of the family. Another sister to me, as bright as any button, but without Lizzie's sharp tongue. And never did my mother or Uncle Ben, for the matter of that, never did they lose a chance to hint at a betrothal. But now, the waiting imposed by Lorna was at an end, and all thoughts of Reuben Huckaback and little Ruth flew from my mind. But alas, I was utterly disappointed. Although I waited and waited for hours, and again the next night, on my third visit to the Valley of the Dunes, with my hopes fading with the light.
Master Riggs!
Rona, is that you?
Not so loud. The guard, they're coming.
Gwenny, where's your mistress?
Are we taking a wild goose, Charlie? Or did you see us?
Carver doom by God.
Oh, they're Tom.
Girl, I tell you, the Cornish toad. And it's not the first time I've lost a trail. Now you'd follow any skirt and think it's wrong.
We must get back before him.
But Lorna, is she ill?
I sent them to tell him. I can't get out of an evening now. If then you want to go on with a cording, come of a morning, the good sir.
The very next morning, I arose before dawn and was waiting for her in her bower as the sun was rising.
Oh, Master Rick, I have no way to let you know. They've kept me prisoner every evening, but they carouse into the night and sleep until noon, and so I'm free first thing.
I was afraid.
As long as Sir Ensel lives, I'm safe.
No, I mean, that I was afraid that the answer to my question, the question I have come to ask, afraid of what the answer might be.
If you have come on purpose to ask something, why do you weep?
Because my own life hangs in the balance on a single word.
Oh, John.
When you were a little child, as a boy I worshipped you. As a stripling, I adored you. And now that you're a full-grown maiden, I love you more than heart can hold in silence. I can wait no longer. I must have my answer.
You have been very faithful, John. I suppose I must reward you.
No, that will not do for me. I'll not have a cent for pity's sake. I must have your heart of hearts, even as you have mine.
You have won it all. I shall never be my own again. I'm yours forever and ever.
My darling.
That will do. The present, that will do. Except when I invite you.
But, Lorna...
You may always kiss my hand, you know. John, your dear, lovely ring. Yes. I'll wear it now. And when I dare not, I'll carry it always on my heart. It shall always bind me to you.
Oh, my darling.
Now, Master John, you must go. But promise me one thing.
Thank the most beautiful world.
You must tell your mother all about me. I feel I know her so well already and love her very much. Now, promise me.
I promise.
Promises are more easily made than kept. I knew my mother would be greatly moved and vexed, the heirship of Glendune not being a very desirable dowry. I resolved, therefore, to wait a suitable time. But that time was closer than I thought, for when I arrived home, there was Winnie, Tom Faggus's horse, outside, and in the parlour...
No more fast and loose. I love the maid and she loves me, and we will have one another, either with your leave or without it.
A common highwayman? A man without an acre of his own? And liable to hang on any common?
Ah, there you are, Jack. You're famous for being straightforward, you little. Now just treat me as I treat you now.
John, speak one good word for me.
Not one, my pet. Well, 100. I'm going to make your case so bright, by comparison, that is.
What do you mean?
Mother, I am betrothed.
Betrothed? To Ruth! You've asked little Ruth to marry you. Oh, my good boy.
Not Ruth, no.
Oh. Well, Sally Snow is a farmer's daughter.
Not Sally either. Her name is Lorna. Lorna Doone.
What?
A Doone by thunder. And are the Doones not privileged hang upon common land, cousin
Sarah? Would you break her heart, you great boy?
It had to be said, Lizzie. She'll come to it in the end. No, Mother
dear. Never speak to me! My own son to torture me so! Why not take a whip to my back and be done with it? I know what it is. You want to turn me out. My time is over. Very well. Lizzie and I will quit the house and leave a highwayman and an outlaw wench to ravish the land your murdered father.
I have a notion.
Tom's idea was nothing less than to restate the highwayman's trade and settle to a life of honesty, at which Annie wept and you and my mother too. It was Lizzie who pointed out that he would still have a price on his head. But he had an answer for her as well.
I'll write to London straight, and there I'll sue for pardon from His Majesty himself.
Your cousin would have been proud of you.
Fare thee well.
Farewell. Farewell, Tom.
Bye, Tom.
God be with you.
Thank you, Mother. Thank you.
Aye, you're the dear mother, I promise, Lorna.
You're very wise in kissing me, no doubt. But perhaps you would not be so wise in bringing Lorna for an afternoon just to see what she thinks of me.
She loves you already, but she's told me so.
Very well. There's a good saddle of mutton now. And there are some very good sausages left on the blue dish with the anchor, Annie.
Yes, Lorna, will eat sausages.
If she's to be a farmer's wife, she must take the farmer's ways, I think, no matter how high of birth these outlaws be.
Of course, there was no chance of Lorna paying us a visit, sausages or no. My visits to her were a torment of delight. Hope and despair intermixed like tares in the wheat. A few weeks after Uncle Ben and little Ruth had left, as another visitor arrived. An old acquaintance.
I durst not scatter the nature of my instructions to the wind, John, or confide them to the women, which is much the same. But you have some right to know, being trusted as you were by the Lord Chief Justice.
They say in the village that you're here to catch the smugglers, Master.
Well, so they are meant to believe, and it is true. Also to bring the King's peace to the West Country. And more of that anon, but more important yet. Can you keep a still tongue, lad?
My honour on it.
In secret, then. I'm here to watch the gathering of a plot. Not so much against the King as against his due successor, his brother.
The Duke of York? Prince James?
Aye, there's such disaffection everywhere. Now, hearken to one who wishes thee well, Jack. Stick to the winning side and have naught to do with the other one.
That's the very thing I want to do. If only I knew which was the winning side. Master Stickles was not amused by my jest, as was proper in a king's man, I suppose, and the confidence was at an end. But at the time, I cared not. I had little liking for his dealings, which seemed to me a sort of spying on the people. But the comings and goings of Jeremy Stickles, and there were many, sometimes for days at a time, soon became as nothing. For my own affairs were thrown into utter disorder.
Well, there you are, Annie. Sent them at home to eat the dinner. It's so wet out there. They'll sure jump right for first conversation in the couch here. Wait, Annie, what? Something's made you cry. What is it? Has Lizzie been spiteful again?
No. You're mistaken. It's just the onions. They always... Oh, Jack. It's nearly 4 weeks now and not a word from Tom. You don't think...
Four weeks is nothing. Once those lawyers get hold of him, he'd be lucky to escape their clutches under a 12-month.
John, where are you going? You haven't eaten your good pasty. You're not going up to see Lorna again in this rain.
But you haven't seen him for nearly a week now, and she hasn't come once. There's no signal. She hasn't even sent her little maid. I cannot bear to think what might have happened.
Well, go down the valley to the doomed village and find out then.
Lizzie.
She'd be spying on us.
Not in the least. I've been reading my book in the chimney corner and composing spiteful things to say.
Lizzie, I'm sorry. If I'd known you were there, I'd...
Mother was brave enough to go all those years ago. She's more a man than her own son, seems to me.
You're a devil in your corner, real ring.
You haven't taken your path, Dave.
Lizzie was more right than I cared to admit even to myself. That night,
As I came up the valley, deep into the cover of the trees and bushes, I could feel my heart beating as hard as it had all those years ago when I hid in the water. At any moment I might surprise a sentry on patrol. Mother had said that Sir Ensor's house was the largest, and when I came to it, I saw by the flickering light of a candle inside that a side window was barred. Barred, like to a jail. And there was my love at last.
Who's that? If that's the child.
Oh, Lorna! Don't you know me?
John! You must be mad.
You knew I would come. Of course you did.
Well, I thought that. Oh, no, John, there's no need to eat my hand.
You think I would be contented with your hand but for these vile bars?
Oh, John, you'll make me cry directly if you go on in that way.
But what does all this mean? Has your grandfather turned against you?
My poor grandfather is very ill. I fear that he'll not live very long. The councillor and his son are now masters of the valley. They watch my every move. Even little Gwenny cannot leave the village now, so I could send him a message. My grandfather should die.
I will not stay long, for you tremble so. Yet how can I leave you?
You must. You must. John, kind, dear, darling John, if you love me, go.
But how can I go without settling anything? How shall I know of your danger now?
I have been trying to think of something all the week. You see that tree with a seven rook's nest right against the cliff there? Could you count them from above, do you think?
To be sure.
Gwenny can climb like any cat. If you see but six nests there, I am in peril and want you. If you see but five, I am carried off by Carver.
Oh, good God!
Do not be afraid, John. I have the means to save myself from shame. If you can come within one day of that man's getting hold of me, you'll find me quite unharmed. After that, you'll find me dead. And now you must go.
Oh, yes, you, my darling.
Farewell, my own love.
Though much of trouble, and there's still a weight of care was off my mind. For one thing was certain, if Lorna could not have John Red, no one else should have her. All my thoughts were one thing only. How could I alone combat the dooms? But soon I found I had an ally, and this is how it came to pass. Master Stipple sought my counsel once again, telling me something I had long suspected.
Aye, it was on the information laid by Master Reuben Huckaback that His Honour sent for thee.
God, if I knew it!
And when he heard your tale of these thieving brigands, he determined to seek the facts of the matter through a trusted agent of experience and skill. For these weeks, I have sought to discover the truth about the Doones. And what have I discovered? Robbery, rape and murder. Fear amongst the people. Corrupt dealings with the gentry. They must be stopped.
But how, Master Stickles? How?
I have a commission to raise a military force sufficient to exterminate this nest of vermin. It will take some weeks to gather my forces, but before the leaves are finished falling, we will have routed out these vile doom fellows and burnt their houses over their heads.
And sure enough, the following day, he set off to alert the troops at his disposal. And I knew not whether to rejoice or despair, for if an attack on Glendoon were to be made by savage soldiers and rude train bands, what might happen to my innocent Lorna? But as it turned out, Jeremy's plans were to be thwarted. Once again, God's own providence, or unseen fate, I know not, stepped in to change the course of our human intentions. Lorna had told me that Sir Ensor Doone had not long to live, and now she could hardly leave his bedside.
Lorna? Lorna, are you there?
Here I am, Grandfather.
Come closer.
Are you feeling worse? Shall I fetch the counselor or send for a priest to come?
No, no. Listen to me now. You see the box that sits by the chest?
That one?
I take this key and unlock it. Open it. You see what lies on top of the papers? Take it out.
This glass necklace. It's beautiful.
It is yours.
I cannot take it if it was stolen.
It belonged to your mother.
Oh. Oh, grandfather.
You've been a good child. And always good to me. But it was a cruel day that brought you here. I've tried to protect you from the vileness that surrounds this place. But what will become of you now? Left alone, with no one to care for you.
I shall not be alone. I have been keeping a secret from you.
And now you are going to tell me?
I think I must.
When I went up one evening to look for my 7 rooks' nests, there were but 6 to be seen. I was to come because my love was in danger. As I approached the outskirts of the village, keeping to the shadows for fear of lookouts, a short, thick-set figure appeared out of the gloom.
So you come.
Gwenny.
Aye, I'm sent to fetch thee. Old man be dying, and he can't die, or at least he won't, without first considering thee.
What? Has Mistress Lorna told him?
She has. And that vexed he was about thy low blood. This is what's to come of all thy courting. Oh, follow me, boy. You quite safe. The people know it, though the old man what sent for thee.
My love,
Lorna.
Oh, forgive me, dearest. I could not let you.
There is naught to forgive.
Gwenny, tell him John is here.
Aye.
You must be patient with him, dearest. Show him some reverence if you can. But above all things, no compassion. It drives him almost mad.
You must come in. Alone.
Close the door. So you are that great John Red.
John Red is my name, Your Honor. And I hope your worship is better.
Child, are you ignorant that Lorna Doone is born of the oldest families remaining in North Europe?
I know of her high descent from the Doones of Badgery, Your Worship.
And know you of your own low descent from the Rids of Orr?
Sir, the Rids of Orr have been honest men twice as long as the Doones have been rogues.
If that be so, John, your family is the very oldest in Europe. Now, boy, or clown, or honest fool, or whatever you are, hearken to the words of a dying man. I forbid you ever to see that foolish child again.
But, sir...
You will pledge your word in Lorna's presence. Now call her, for I am weary.
Lorna, come, dear.
But John, I'm frightened.
I shall hold you to my heart, and he shall see for himself that we can never be apart.
Grandfather?
Oh, you two fools. You two fools.
If it please your worship, maybe we are not such fools as we look, but if we are, we're well content so long as we can be two fools together.
Why, John, you're not the clumsy yokel and the clod I took you for.
Oh, no, dear grandfather. Nobody knows but me what John Red is, because he is so modest.
I have seen a little of the world. But this is beyond all I have seen.
When it happens to people, sir, there is nothing that can stop it.
Fools you are. Be fools forever. It is the best thing I can wish you. Boy and girl, be boy and girl together until you have grandchildren.
Grandfather.
Sir Ensor died within the hour, still refusing the solace of a priest, and not a tear was shed upon him, except from the sweetest of all sweet eyes. It is said that 3 good pickaxes were broken before they got through the hard brown sod where he was to lie, awaiting the darkness of Judgment Day. For the greatest frost of the century had set in.
It's the black east wind and the raw fog. My father told me he'd seen the same when he was a little one. And then, such a snow set in as killed half the sheep. Aye, and even the red deer and the forest ponies were found rigid where they stood.
We get the livestock under cover first light.
Oh, look, John, Mother's right, snowing.
Oh, no!
When I awoke early next morning, my heart sank. The drifts were like the worst of January's. It must have snowed most wonderfully to have made the depth of covering in less than 8 hours. Lorna was trapped, and the snow never ceased for more than 2 days at a time for full 3 weeks thereafter. And every day, the frost grew harder.
Oh, well, another effort, eh? Even in the fire. We're losing half our stock, honey.
Sit down and warm your hands, Jack. You must be frozen to the bone. Oh. You're out before dawn again. I heard you go.
I cannot even reach the ridge to see Lorna's signal. She'll think I've abandoned her to Charver.
I'll stick the poker in a mug of cider.
It's Mother's coffee, mate. I'll take a cup of that.
Now, the kettle was frozen on the hob. Mother's gone back to bed.
Oh, so there you are, Lizzie. Still at your book, then. Well, the jar of the saint of the creatures, I'll be bound.
You're a great fool, John. What a pity you never read.
There aren't much use in reading with the roof coming in and only the chimney sticking out the snow.
Well, just you listen to what I read about climates 10 times worse than this in the very book you brought to me from London. The Journeys of Frobisher to the Great Arctic.
Oh, you have nothing better to do, I suppose.
Well, just you listen, then. And thus, any man can get along, no matter how deep the snow, with a boot on either foot to prevent his sinking.
A boot?
Do they call them snowshoes, too? Look, here's a picture. You can see how they're made, see? And with them on your feet, you could call in your lady love whenever the fancy took you.
Let me...
The good Lord made our Eliza for books, just as he made Annie for loving and cooking, and John Ritt for wrestling and sheep. And with the thought of Lorna. Within a couple of days, albeit with aching legs and sore ankles, they set off for Glendune once more, sliding through the blizzard on my snow canoes, with half a loaf in the pocket, and a great mince pie made of golden pippins, finely shred and spiced and fruit, and the best undercut of beefsteak. In case, Annie said, I got hungry on the way. The houses in the village of the Dunes were partly drifted up, though not as much as ours. All were in darkness, save Carver's dwelling and that of his father next door. So, being in safely hidden by the blinding snow, I ventured to the front of Lorna's house, and risking that my answer might be the mouth of a gun, I knocked on the door. Only me, John Red.
Quick, Ben. Oh. Great booby, get inside.
I loosed my feet from the snowshoes, and she pulled me in, slamming the door after me.
What's the meaning of this, Gwenny?
Meaning enough. I'll stay shut in here and starving. I'll have to eat anything. I could manage most of the day, John Red.
God, you drink some bread and stuff.
Keep it here.
Granny, where are you going?
Mistress, I brought you some bread. Oh, there, what made it?
Get water. Don't you know what fainting is, you stupid child?
Never heard on it in Cornwall. Being the same as blazing. Oh, ain't it, mistress? Come on now.
You sound. You leave your mistress to me. Oh, no. Darling, it's your John.
Johnny.
Thank God.
I never expected to see you again. I'd made up my mind to die without your knowing it.
I can't abide to hear such things, my love. If you love me, you'll never say such...
I love you. Oh, my dearest one.
Have you come to this pass? No, you have no need to tell me. You are to be starved until you choose to marry Carver.
It was the counselor who ordered it. And he's taken turns with his son to watch the house to make sure no one should bring us any food.
I saw neither of them.
What? On a night like this? In any case, tonight they hold high festival for all the valley to honor Carver as the new captain.
Then now is the very time.
Time?
If I warrant to take you safe, will you come home with me?
Oh, to be sure I will, dear.
Gwenny, have you the courage for it? Will you come with your mistress?
Will I stay behind?
In 2 hours' time, I'll be with you again. Keep the door bolted until I go.
And so I left him. My tiredness had gone. It was all I could do not to shout my defiance to the leaden sky. Nothing could stop me now. But how was I to get them out?
And why not in the farm sledge, pray? Am I not as strong as any pony?
And as daft as any donkey. They were supposed to bring our high lady out through the Doon Gate, like the queen in a carriage.
Why, the water slide I told you of is now a path of ice, with little snow to hide it. I leave the sledge at the top and carry Mistress Lorna there.
I fastened myself to the sledge, using the collar and the leather traces we used to harness the pony to it. And by this device, I contrived to drag it up the slide. My plan was going to work. But when I reached Sir Anthony's house...
Winnie! Lorna! Lorna! The door was unlocked. As I desperately pulled off my great shoes, there was another scream for help.
No, Charlie, no! No, I don't understand!
Come here, girl, stop you! Get off me, you little... No! By all the devils in hell, it's John Riff!
I'll kill you!
I seized Charlie by the arm and flung him away from Lorna. He aimed a wild blow at me, but a fist to his heart and a short shot to his jaw. And he lay at my feet, senseless and bleeding.
Yes, he does.
He's bleeding still. Has he hurt you, my love?
No. No, it was my fault. I let him in. I thought about you, Master.
We must get out before he recovers his wits, if he ever does.
My plan to escape by the frozen Badgery water nearly proved to be the death of all of us. My foot turned on an icy rock and I fell, but by God's grace, a fallen tree, smitten by the frost, extended a saving branch. And so we came at last to Plover's Barrows.
Lorna.
Let her lie against the pillars. She's chilled to the bone. Oh, Johnny, she's so beautiful. What is it?
Lorna, my love, you're safe. We're home.
Home? Aye. This is your home now. Home. Home. Oh, John.
My dearest dear.
God bless you, my fair mistress. God bless you, my sweet child.
Over the next few weeks, Lorna so won them all by her kind and gentle ways that I could almost wish they would leave her more to me. I had told her that she was safe, but all the time it was in my mind that Charlie Doon had recognized me. My fears were all too sound. It was in the middle of March, and the thaw had come at last.
Lorna!
John, oh, come and see. The hyacinths are just pushing through, look, like a baby's teeth.
You shouldn't be out at all, my love. Still very cold.
Not in the sun.
My darlings, you must come in at once with that worrisome cough of yours and sit by the fire and warm yourself.
Oh, no, John, I want to see the snow going away and the green meadows underneath. I want to hear about Robin, who lived in the oven so long. I must see what he thinks of it, please.
Very well, but you must have a shawl or a cloak to shield you from this wind. I'll tell Granny to bring you something.
If I had not left at that moment, my life might have soon ended, for as I went round the corner into the farmyard...
Lorna! Lorna!
There was cover in the woods across the river.
Are you hurt?
No, he entered the ground between my feet. Look, there he is! John, come back!
Come and go! If you want to fight, then come! I am ready for you!
Spare her this time only because it suits my plan. She is mine! But unless I have her back, pure, and with all she took away, Project is here in my gun with yours!
Why, my death are yours! I just made this gun cover, dude! Before God, I swear it! I just might need to the ground!
From that day, we stood ready, knowing that as soon as the flooded valley would allow it, a vicious attack would be made upon the farm. Within the week, along came Master Jeremy Stickles, splashed with mud from head to foot, and followed by four troopers.
Hey, Master Stickles! Jeremy, welcome back, sir. You look to be in a sorry case.
Downs, by God. Ambushed by the blackguards by Landacre Bridge. One of my men tumbled into the torrent by a lucky shot. Thank God it was only a trooper.
Then they're abroad again. That must mean they're ready to attack the farm.
What do you mean?
Come inside, sir, and I'll tell you. That's all we can expect them, as soon as may be. This very night, at my guess.
And what's your garrison?
Garrison? Small enough. Our farm workers. Bill Dars with a sickle, Jim Slocum with a flail, and John Fry with his old blunderbuss full of tin tacks and marbles.
Yeah.
And me, with a club, and my best gun.
Those doomed, impudent villains. And traitors, too, I'll warrant. The sooner we're rid of them, the better I'll be pleased.
It wasn't likely that the outlaws would attack the farm until sometime after the moon was risen, because of the danger of crossing the flooded valleys. And well it was, for the smell of the clover rick where I was watching and the sound of the flowing waters closed my brain as a cobbler sews a vamp, and I slept as soundly as if I were in my own bed. Suddenly, a hand on my arm awoke me.
Gwenny, what is it? Turn on him. Cross the water yonder. My own I've been up the edge row now. I've been up yon tray. I saved him. I could have shot three on him. It's so big I had your gun.
There's no time to lose. Run to the house and warn Master Stickles and all the men while I stay here and watch the rick.
Soon I saw our troopers moving quietly out and staying in the shadow of the house, waiting for Jeremy's order to fire. The robbers came into our yard as coolly as if they'd been invited. And at their head, I knew him by his size in the moonlight. At their head was Carver Doone. I lifted my gun. Aim was sure as death itself. I had but to draw the trigger.
All of you! There are two young mates here who'd satisfy any man. What? If any man touches Lorna, I will kill him where he stands. She belongs to me. We have fooled too long the insolence of these yokels. Kill every man and burn the cursed place down.
But I could not fire. It seemed like murder. I dropped my carbine as the robbers moved forward, but Jeremy was ready for him.
Fire!
To Two of the swaggering villains fell, and the rest hung back in surprise.
Forward, Dundonies! Are you afraid of my little blood? You call yourselves men!
I could contain myself no longer. I came across the yard, expecting they would shoot at me, but none did. And I seized Tarver Doom by the beard.
Do you call yourself a man? You insolent!
But I knocked his pistol aside and grasped his wrist as well. There was no way he could escape my grip. Take warning, Tarver Doom. You have shown yourself a fool by your contempt of me. Lie low in your native mud. Seeing their captain down and our men coming up, the scoundrels turned and fled.
This is your death warrant, John Ridd.
You are a despicable villain, sir.
Go! Leave my land. Your very presence poisons the light of the moon shining on it. Next time!
Not to have pulled that trigger was the act of a fool. But I had never taken human life, nor done bodily harm to any man save the trifles of a wrestling ring. My enemy was still alive, and how bitterly I came to regret it.
In episode 2 of Lorna Doone by R.D. Blackmore, adapted for radio by Barry Letts, the narrator and John Ridd were played by David Schofield. Lorna Doone by Alison Pettit. Mother by Janet Dale. Lizzie Ridd by Sunny Ormond. And Annie Ridd by Catherine Mount. Tom Faggus by Cornelius Garrett. And Jeremy Stickles by Graham Padden. Gwenny by Susan Jeffrey. Uncle Ben by James Warrior. And Judge Jeffries by Jonathan Wyatt. Carver Doone was played by Kim Durham and Charlie Doone by David Perks. Other parts were played by members of the company. Lorna Doone was directed at Pebble Mill by Brian Lighthill.